It's not just good conversation, it's your voice on the weekends. Weekends with Kenny Rahmeyer on News Radio KLBJ.
Hi, Kenny. Thank you for taking my call, and I enjoy your show.
I really like the way you present yourself on the radio. I always enjoy listening to you.
Always love listening to you, Kenny. Great job. Come on, talk to me.
And good afternoon to you. Thanks a lot for being with us on the weekends here on News Radio KLBJ. I'm Kenny Rahmeyer. This afternoon, all the latest on the ongoing tensions between Russia and Ukraine. And is there a chance that President Biden will ultimately meet with Russia's President Putin in a face-to-face meeting about all of this? I got to say, let's hope it doesn't come down to that. Hopefully things get resolved diplomatically, successfully, peacefully, before a showdown between Putin and Biden. We'll talk about that coming up here on KLBJ. The Austin American Statesman reports this weekend Austin has the hottest job market in the country, proving once again as a city we're successful, even in spite of failed leadership on the part of many in city government, including most of those on our Austin City Council. We'll have the latest on that for you in just a moment on KLBJ. Democrat gubernatorial candidate Robert Francis O'Rourke says he doesn't want any help on the campaign trail from President Joe Biden. Well, wait a minute, Beto. At one point, the president, then the candidate Biden, but the president said that he was going to have you to be the guy that was out there taking away our AR-15s, right? And the president just said late last week he was looking forward to being out on the campaign trail more with Democrat candidates. So what's up with that? We'll talk about that and a whole lot more here this afternoon on KLBJ. You can always join us at 512-836-0590. You can give us a call or send us a text here on KLBJ. We got to start with this. Unemployment rate in the Austin area is down below 3%, first time since the pandemic began. It came in at 2.9% in December. According to the Statesman, the economists say the Austin area is booming and that local employers in many industries are hiring new workers as fast as they can find them. There's a University of Texas professor and economist, Dirk Mateer, who is quoted in this piece, says that he thinks it could drop below 2.5% this year due to the intense demand for workers in the Central Texas area from big companies like Tesla, Apple, Samsung, and Oracle, as well as from a number of other businesses that have been relocating here. And get this, the unemployment rate in the Austin metro area, which includes Travis, Williamson, Hayes, Bastrop, and Caldwell counties, was at 2.4% in December 2019, just before the pandemic. And then in April of 2020, it was up to almost 12% unemployment. And now here we are, down to around just under 3%. What an amazing turnaround. Unemployment down 9.5% in about a year and a half. That is what many would say are incredible economic times under any circumstances. And here we are in Austin living that right now. I saw another article that talked about just as the jobs market is going great guns here, it apparently it's going pretty well in other places as well, because there's the highest quit rate nationwide that we've seen in quite some time. States with the highest quit rates, those people who are quitting their jobs and looking for employment elsewhere, Five states with the highest quit rates: Georgia, New Hampshire, Vermont, North Dakota, and Kentucky. A record number of people quit before the holidays, apparently, and it's pretty amazing when you take a look at the percent of the adult population not working because of COVID. Tripled between December and January. That's, again, that's a nationwide number, but still, Austin is bucking the trends and blazing new trails in being able to get people jobs. Pretty amazing. Just wanted to throw that out there this afternoon. 512-836-0590. You can give us a call or send us a text here on KLBJ. There's a recent survey conducted by the U.S. Conference Board. That's a private research group. More than half of U.S. CEOs expect at least 40% of employees to work remotely 3 or more days per week after the pandemic subsides. 82% of these roughly 900 CEOs said they're facing upward pricing pressures. And, of course, a lot of them are raising wages for some of their workers, and that's playing into our inflation situation, which is a whole nother conversation here. So just wanted to throw out a few of those stats. Pretty amazing. The unemployment rate in the Austin area below 3% for the first time since the pandemic began. 512-836-0590 here on KLBJ. You can give us a call or send us a text. A couple other local news items. This one about Capital Metro. And if you haven't kept up with all of the Project Connect and the Capital Metro budget and all the rest, the budget for this year is just over $266 million. Project Connect, of course, has to do with a lot of additional light rail and a lot of additional reworking of the downtown area. You've probably heard us talking a lot about that on this radio station. But the news this weekend is this one particular light rail line, it's called the Orange Line, got some money from the feds, from the Federal Transit Administration. This Orange Line is going to have 8 stations along about a 6.5-mile run, and that's a part of a 20-mile line. It's going to go from Tech Ridge Park and Ride at Howard Lane south toward Slaughter Lane, and then running along both South Lamar and South Congress, and I think it ends up around Stastny someplace. In any event, got $750,000, a $750,000 grant for a portion of this Orange Line light rail service. Well, when they say a portion of it, it's a very small portion, just to put it in context for you. Take a look at that $266 million Cap Metro budget. They've got $92.8 million allocated for the Orange Line light rail service. All right, so let's say we got the $750,000. That takes away the .8. Now we're still on the hook for another $92 million. Where's that coming from? How much more were they counting on from the feds that we didn't get, right? We don't know that. From the Federal Transit Administration that gave us the $750,000, were they wanting millions of dollars and we only got $750,000? Who knows? Still a lot of work to do on coming up with a lot of money for a lot more of light rail lines, apparently. 512-836-0590. And just finishing off a little bit of local news here, the Austin Police Department investigating a double homicide in North Austin. 2 people found shot to death in a parking lot. This was just before noon on Saturday. And so the Austin homicide rate starts all over again. Record number last year, right? And here we are, not even out of January yet, and more homicides to talk about. 512-836-0590 here on KLBJ. We have some political news, the latest on what's going on between Russia and Ukraine and a whole lot more. Stay with us here on KLBJ. And Kenny Rahmeyer right back with you here on a Sunday afternoon. Thanks for being with us on News Radio KLBJ. Some breaking news from CNN. Just a moment ago, Ukraine has received a second weapons supply shipment from the United States. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken was out on the Sunday TV news shows today talking about there's going to be massive consequences for Russia if its military forces invade Ukraine. And of course, we know the UK has said it's exposed a plot by Russia to install a friendly government in the Ukraine. These are allegations coming from the UK. Here's the latest on that from Greg Palcrot from Fox News.
People here are concerned about new word coming from the UK government about a possible change in government here, but they're expecting it as well. The claim is that Russian President Putin is allegedly trying to scheme to install a pro-Moscow regime in place of the current leadership, even naming Russia-friendly figures who would take over. Now, my sources here on the ground say it's plausible Russia does this kind of thing. They sow disinformation, then they line up folks to do their dirty business. But the point also made to us is that any shadow government could only really be put in place here after an invasion, if Moscow does it and if it succeeds.
So neither the UK nor the US would reveal exactly how or why it believes Russia's intending to bring in its alleged agents to try to get them into power. Along with that, CNN says the latest numbers on how many Russian troops are now surrounding Ukraine's up around 127,000. That number we learned on CNN from this morning. U.S. Secretary of State Blinken also on the Sunday news shows today dodging a question about whether there was any scenario in which U.S. troops would be deployed to defend the Ukraine. Blinken said the NATO is preparing massive consequences Russia if a single additional Russian force enters Ukraine. Here's a little bit of what Blinken said about this NATO response.
In the event that there is a renewed Russian incursion, Russian forces going into Ukraine, there is going to be a swift, a severe and united response. But we've also been clear that there are other things, we were just talking about this, that Russia could do, short of sending forces into Ukraine again, to try to destabilize or topple the government. Right. Cyber attacks, hybrid means, etc. And there, we've also been clear, there'll be a swift response, there'll be a calibrated response, there'll be a united response.
And then on CNN's program, State of the Union, the moderator, Dana Bash, was asking Secretary Blinken about sanctions. And she said, you know, there's a lot of people who are suggesting any kind of sanctions that would take effect after Russia has acted. It's probably too late. What about trying to do something more proactively?
First of all, Donna, as I said, we are not waiting. We are doing a lot right now. And as I mentioned, besides the United States taking the lead in bringing countries throughout Europe and even beyond together in putting together massive consequences for Russia if it takes renewed aggressive action in Ukraine, as I mentioned, we're providing, and last year alone provided more military assistance to Ukraine than at any year in the past. We have been going against those inside Ukraine, trying to destabilize the government. So we're taking concrete action.
But you're not imposing the sanctions.
So when it comes to sanctions, the purpose of those sanctions is to deter Russian aggression. And so if they're triggered now, you lose the deterrent effect. All of the things that we're doing, including building up in a united way with Europe, massive consequences for Russia, is designed to factor into President Putin's calculus and to deter and dissuade them from taking aggressive action, even as we pursue diplomacy at the same time.
I don't know. Has anybody else got any concerns about a lot of these Obama administration retreads being in charge of things at such a pivotal and intense time between the United States, Russia, and certainly between Russia and the Ukraine? Saw this from CNN. The Biden administration has been in regular discussions with a number of countries and companies in Europe, the Middle East, North Africa, and Asia about stepping up production of natural gas and shipping liquefied natural gas to Europe, just in case Russia does go into Ukraine and that would lead to gas shortages. What I found interesting, this report, Reuters said that, yeah, the State Department has been in talks with energy companies, but that increased production was not a request. Now, another senior U.S. official told CNN that increased production has been discussed, but the companies recognized that increasing production could be risky and would take time. Yeah, the risks are a lot of these big U.S. companies began to pour a lot more money into production, and then the Biden administration comes around and clamps down on them with even more regulations beyond what's already been put in place since Biden came in and Trump went out. No wonder there's some hesitancy on the part of these big U.S. companies to want to engage in that kind of dialogue with the Biden administration. And then I mentioned at the top of the show, this was something that was out of the Secretary of State just this past Friday, said that President Joe Biden and Vladimir Putin from Russia might meet in an effort to resolve the standoff. And I'm just thinking that's a disaster in the making if it comes down to that. Right? I mean, if we could use the boxing match metaphor, you put those two guys in a room talking about high stakes diplomacy over the Ukraine. I mean, if it were a boxing match or a prize fight, right, it'd be called in the first round for Putin. I mean, here you'd have that steely gaze from a former KGB officer Vladimir Putin. And on the other side of the table, you got the sleepy daze from President Joe Biden. And you'd have Putin talking to his translator saying, how do we say, wake him up? I hope it doesn't come to that. Like I said, I hope it doesn't come to a showdown between Putin and Biden in a face-to-face match. I don't think that'd be a good thing. No foreign policy expert, just some observations here. 512-836-0590 on KLBJ. Speaking of politics, got a couple other things I want to throw in the mix here. It was reported in the Austin American-Statesman. Remember back when the Texas legislature was still in session and a bunch of Democrats decided to bail out, right? I mean, most of them, at least for some part of the time, went to Washington, D.C. A Statesman reports, this was all about making sure that there wasn't a quorum in the legislature, right? So it was their quorum-busting attempt, which worked for a while, but then, of course, they came back and the legislature took up business again, and it was all for naught. Statesman reports, the Democrats raised and spent around $1 million on their quorum-busting efforts. Talk about a bust. That was a bust, right? $1 million. I don't know where that money came from in total. Not sure who offered it up. But you got to figure those people are saying, what a waste. What a waste of money. And I mentioned that Robert Francis O'Rourke, he's the Texas Democrat gubernatorial candidate, sometimes known as Beto, he said he would have no interest in getting campaign assistance from President Joe Biden. Wait a minute. You were the guy who was going to be Biden's take away their guns guy at one point, right? He said he's not going to seek any help from any politician from Washington, D.C. Well, little wonder, I suppose, right? I mean, we've got some new poll numbers out. Fox News has some polling out this weekend, as does a national NBC News poll. And President's job approval rating in the low 40s, according to this poll. Of course, we know in the Quinnipiac poll recently, he plumbed some new lows down in the low 30s. But get this, in this NBC News poll, 72% of Americans say the country is headed in the wrong direction. Virtually same amount of people said the same thing back in October. So for the past few months or so, the American people polled on this NBC News poll, 72% say Americans headed in the wrong direction. Specifically, when they were asked to describe where they believe America is today, the top answers were downhill, divisive, negative, struggling, lost, and bad. Well, none of those are good, certainly, right? Not good for our country, not good for this president or his party. Like I said, the Fox News poll gave the president a 47% job approval rating. You're going to latch on to that one. That's way better than some of these others that he's been seeing lately, right? And here's just to make sure that this point is not lost on all of this with respect to Biden and his low poll numbers. But just back to the sentiments expressed by some of these Americans who were polled by NBC News and asked to describe where they believe America is today. Downhill, divisive, negative, struggling, lost, bad. All right, so the president's in the Oval Office. He's in the White House and the buck stops there, right? That's the old thing. But keep in mind that you take a look at a lot of government positions that have been staffed with a whole lot of liberal policy thinkers at very high levels from the Bernie Sanders camp, the Elizabeth Warren camp, a couple of very liberal senators who have their tentacles spread throughout the government. So it's not just Biden. It's a whole lot of other stuff going on in his administration that a lot of people are not liking and not warming up to. Stay with us. A whole lot more coming up on KLBJ. And welcome back to the weekends here on News Radio KLBJ, live and local for you this afternoon. I'm Kenny Rahmeyer. I was just talking about some of the dismal numbers that came out of the latest NBC News poll for President Biden, the Biden administration. How about this for just icing on the cake for those of us that think what's going on at the southern border is an unmitigated disaster under this administration? It's being reported now that Biden's team is looking to make it easier for immigrants coming across the border to get legal services. Going to launch this program. It's called Legal Access at the Border, the LAB program. It's going to launch in 7 border cities: San Diego out in California, then here in Texas, El Paso, Eagle Pass, Laredo, and Brownsville, all cities which have the remain in Mexico policy. And of course, the Biden team has said, you got to keep that up. You got to keep doing that remain in Mexico policy. They've been dragging their feet. And now the Justice Department has this program that's going to figure out ways to get more legal services for those coming across the borders illegally. It's mainly going to provide legal assistance with contractors explaining options for how to stay in the United States, even though deportation orders might be pending. It's just another outrage, especially up against the story that we just heard this weekend, a sad story. Texas DPS special agent died after a crash near the Mexico border. Here's the latest on that one.
The Precinct 5 deputy is identified as 47-year-old Corporal Charles Galloway, a 12-year veteran of the force. Houston Police Chief Troy Finner.
Witnesses describe the suspect as Hispanic male, said that he got out of his vehicle and immediately fired upon the deputy multiple times, striking him, and then drove off. This is senseless.
Charles Galloway is survived by his daughter and sister. Paul Stevens, Fox News.
That's a story out of the Houston area. This story is of DPS trooper special agent I was referring to. I mean, this guy was Texas Highway Patrol, served in the U.S. Marine Corps, and he was working a tactical operation on Friday. This accident happened around Eagle Pass, Texas. Didn't provide the circumstances surrounding the crash. Just very sad news, Governor Abbott said, a tragedy and a somber reminder of the selfless sacrifices of our law enforcement as they work to keep us safe. This guy died in the line of duty there in Eagle Pass. So whether it's what's going on down on the border, what's the report you just heard out of the Houston area, a couple of cops were shot in New York City over the weekend. The latest I've seen, one lost his life. The other is struggling to hold on. And the war on law enforcement seems to just continue in this country from outside our borders and inside some of these major cities as well. Very sad. Very sad situation here. Jose in Lockhart on KLBJ this afternoon. Hello, Jose.
Hi. I just want to say that based on the fact that the Democrats have been demonizing the Russians for the longest time, I really don't think that they look at this administration in a real credible way. And some of the facts are, and you'll need to correct me if I'm mistaken. Number one, did the Crimea Peninsula, was it invaded during the Obama administration?
That is correct.
Okay. Here's another one. And again, you'll need to correct me with the South China Sea with respect to the artificial island. Did that occur during the Obama?
Jose, I'm sorry. You're breaking up on us there. I think you were talking about China and some of the bases that it's been building up in the South China Seas. In any event, the situation with the Ukraine and with Russia continues to heat up. As I mentioned just moments ago, CNN reports we've now, U.S. has sent a second round of weapons and munitions shipments to the Ukraine. And we know that some of our allies, the Brits and some others, have been sending munitions and such to Ukraine as well. So both sides seem to be ramping up, and remains to be seen where's the off-ramp, right? Where's the point when all of this is going to be diffused? 512-836-0590, if you have a thought on that this afternoon. I wanted to mention this story, because I got to say, when I first saw this, I thought, no, I can't be right. I can't be right. And I went beyond some of the national headlines and tried to dig into it at a more local level. I was talking about in the Denver area. And the report is that one of the public elementary schools there has announced a plan to engage kindergarten and first grade students in a Black Lives Matter at School Week of Action. And it centers on topics about sexuality and race. And I thought, all right, come on. You're talking this kind of stuff with kindergartners and first graders? So, I as I said, tried to go beyond the national headlines, found a CBS local news story out of Denver about this, and one from Fox local news as well. They both essentially said the same thing. This is at the Centennial Elementary School, and this Black Lives Matter School Week of Action is a two-week learning and discussion series about 13 principles of the BLM school organization for 5, 6, and 7-year-olds. Now, keep that in mind. And here's some of the things that are going to be taught, according to the CBS station report there in Denver and the Fox News station there as well. One of the 13 topics or principles is transgender affirming. That's going to discuss, I'm quoting here, recognizing trans antagonistic violence. Another principle to, quoting here, generate a queer-affirming network where heteronormative thinking no longer exists. And then there's going to be another one called the Black Villages that apparently involves, quote, the disruption of Western nuclear family dynamics. And I thought, please help me understand this. Please tell me you're not going to be talking to 5-, 6-, and 7-year-olds about heteronormative thinking no longer existed. They don't, what's heteronormative? A lot of 5-, 6-, 7-year-olds know what that's all about. Same way with trans antagonistic violence in the transgender affirming category. A lot of 5-, 6-, 7-year-olds know what that's about. Now, apparently, on the according to the CBS report, a link on the school's website about this whole 2-week initiative, Black Lives Matter School Week of Action. When you click on the link about it, it takes you to a frequently asked questions section. One of those questions asks about parents who don't support the BLM organization. And the frequently asked questions, it answers it this way. We're not necessarily teaching about nor promoting the BLM organization. We'll have open, inclusive conversations where we guide children to build and expand their understanding about differences in our world. I mean, how many times are you going to get the question from the 5-, 6-, and 7-year-olds, teacher, what does trans antagonistic violence mean? Teacher, what do you mean by heteronormative thinking? Those are pretty big words for 5-, 6-, and 7-year-olds, aren't they? It's been a while since I've been at that grade level, but... And then what about if the parents want to opt out? Apparently there is no guidance for parents that want to object to the instruction or to withdraw their child from this. That's apparently that information not provided in the frequently asked questions section on the school's website about Black Lives Matter School Week of Action in Denver at the Centennial Elementary School. According to these reports, they reached out to the Denver Public Schools for some comments and didn't receive any reply. Well, imagine that. Would be interested to know what the Denver Public Schools are saying about this. I did see an article in the Denver Post today about declining enrollment in the Denver public school systems. Already got school officials there anticipating and making plans for the number of schools that are going to be closed over the next couple of years due to declining enrollment in the Denver public school system. So if this is the kind of curriculum that's going on, maybe we understand why some of the numbers are going down there in the Denver area. Okay, 512-836-0590. You can give us a call or send us a text here on KLBJ. Lots more to get to, including, you know, we try to keep up with a lot of the high-profile court cases that are going on around the country. And there's certainly been several, right, as we approached the holiday season and went into the new year. But I got to mention this one, and we'll talk about it when we come right back. It's a long-awaited court case between the former VP candidate, Sarah Palin, and the New York Times. We'll talk about it coming up right here on KLBJ. And we're back with you here live and local on a Sunday afternoon, News Radio KLBJ. I'm Kenny Rahmeyer. So yeah, this trial, Sarah Palin v. New York Times, it begins tomorrow. It's the start of jury selection. This is the trial over Sarah Palin's defamation lawsuit against the New York Times. And I'm guessing this is going to get scant media attention. Why? Because you're going to have the old gray lady, right, the flagship liberal newspaper, the New York Times, essentially is going to have to be defending a story that was incorrect. and the New York Times says admitted that it was incorrect. Just a quick recap, Palin sued the New York Times in 2017 over an editorial that incorrectly linked the 2011 shooting of then-Congresswoman Gabby Giffords to a map that was circulated by Palin's Political Action Committee, and it showed certain electoral districts under crosshairs. So the New York Times realized it made a mistake, corrected it, and apologized for it. And as Palin was pursuing legal action, a judge initially dismissed the case, but then a federal appeals court said, no, this case can go forward. And as a result, the trial is now going to take place with jury selection beginning tomorrow. So as I've been reading about this, a lot of the legal experts are saying, hey, look, you know, you're talking about limits of the First Amendment protections here, and there's a standard that a public figure has got to prove that the media outlet operated with, quote, actual malice, end quote, when it published this defamatory information. So Palin has said, yeah, the New York Times did have actual malice. The Times, of course, is saying, hey, we just made an honest mistake. And so it's going to be interesting. Don't know what her chances are. I mean, historically, it sounds like, yeah, public figures, there's a high threshold, right? And if public figures could sue media outlets every time something nasty was said about them, it would be out of control, right? So that's why there's the standard that says there has to be proven actual malice on the part of a media outlet. If Palin loses this round in district court, she can try to take it all the way to the Supreme Court, according to this piece in CNN. So we'll be watching that case with interest as the jury selection begins tomorrow. You know, here's a story just to follow up, because I know a lot of you have seen the video, you've seen the reports, and what a mess. The debris fields by the railroad tracks out in L.A., right? Union Pacific saying that there's been a tremendous increase in criminal rail theft there in Los Angeles since December of 2020. $5 million in losses to Union Pacific over the past year, and their chief executive officer said at one time rail theft was pretty much a small-scale operation. What's happening in L.A. is different. He says it's much more organized now. And so Union Pacific wrote a letter to L.A. officials, said, you're not doing enough to police the area. We need your help. Prosecute these people that are caught. The L.A. district attorney, the liberal left-leaning DA that he is, said the number of cases submitted to his office where Union Pacific was listed as the victim, those numbers have actually gone down the last couple of years. And that, in fact, the DA's office brought charges in just over half of those cases. So it's almost like they're pointing fingers at each other now, right? In the meantime, you can see the debris, you can see the carnage left behind here. Union Pacific said they've added dozens of agents in recent months. They're using drones. They're using specialized fencing. And they're also saying they're looking to hire more officers to try to protect these rail cars on the track. So we'll continue to follow that story and see where that goes. 512-836-0590. Still time for you to join us here on KLBJ. I think tomorrow begins the tax filing season. Associated Press says, good luck. Between the worker shortage at the IRS, a tremendous amount of workload of having to crank out a lot of these stimulus checks over the last 12 plus months or so, and legislation in Congress that was designed to give the IRS a whole lot more money, but those bills have stalled out. So the experts are saying, brace yourselves. It's going to be slow going as you're filing your tax returns with the IRS. They've got over 6 million plus returns that still haven't been processed from last year. Last year, IRS processed more than 240 million tax returns, $268 billion in stimulus payments, so they were definitely cranking out a lot of checks there. And over 59.5 million people called or visited an IRS office last year. I mean, in that amount of time and the volume of stuff that they're dealing with, it's amazing, really, if you're getting anything done through the IRS these days, right? So we have that to look forward to as tax filing season is upon us. I got to mention this, Dr. Anthony Fauci, chief medical advisor for President Biden, out on the Sunday TV talk shows today on ABC News. He sounded somewhat optimistic that the Omicron wave was peaking nationally and that cases could begin to fall to manageable levels in the coming months, even as soon as the mid-February timeframe. Here's a little bit of what Dr. Fauci said about that this morning.
There are still some states in the southern states and western states that continue to go up. But if the pattern follows the trend that we're seeing in other places, such as the Northeast, I believe that you will start to see a turnaround throughout the entire country. So things are looking good. We don't want to get overconfident, but they look like they're going in the right direction right now.
All right. Well, there's some positive news, whether you believe it or not. That's the latest from Dr. Anthony Fauci as he was out on the Sunday TV news shows today. Speaking of government agency, just talking about the IRS, and of course, the Trump administration has been talking about we're going to get a tremendous volume of testing kits out the door. And I guess masks are being delivered as well, right, or being made available. Interesting that the U.S. Postal Service, which when it was, of course, a guy named DeJoy was appointed by then-President Trump to come in. This guy's a logistics expert. That's how he's cut his teeth over the years in the private sector. And he was brought in by Trump to try to shore up and fix what's going on in the U.S. Postal Service. And a lot of his plans and a lot of his meetings from these various congressional committees, he was just had his head handed to him by the critics of the Trump administration and critics of what this guy was trying to do with the Postal Service and all that. Well, what do you know? You take a look at their delivery rates for first-class mail, that kind of thing. It was in the 90, 91, 92% range. Haven't seen the latest numbers. They're still totaling those up around the holidays. But, I mean, this was the punching bag for everybody when it was under Trump. Now that it's under Biden, and the numbers are looking pretty good, and, oh, yeah, the U.S. Postal Service is on the hook to get all these test kits out the door. And so everybody's leaning on the U.S. Postal Service to really come through for them now, just as they've been belittling and bemoaning what a lousy operation has been run under this Trump appointee. Not so much now, right? Yeah, I want to just end up with this. Have you thought anything about trying to get off the internet? You've seen his various stories about somebody who'll unplug from the internet or get off their smartphone for a week or so. How about doing it for about 3 months? Apparently, there are some people that did this. We apparently spend around 3 hours, 15 minutes on our phones every day. That's according to the latest research. Our attention spans are shorter than ever. And there are some people that stayed away from it for a total of 3 months. Think about that. I'll just stop as you're listening to this and think, could you do that? Could you unplug for 3 months? Most of you couldn't do it for 3 minutes, much less 3 months. What's interesting is they say all this data coming at us from all the various media outlets, and that's around the equivalent of 700 newspapers a day. Think of that. Think of the onslaught of stuff coming at us that way. So just think about that next time you pick up your smartphone or you log on. Hey, thanks for being with us. Back with you next weekend. KLBJ.